My father had been a mathematician, a famous one, at least as far as any mathematician or scientist not named Einstein can be famous. Other mathematicians in his field knew his name. Nobody else did. On the day he died, he told me, "The equations that govern the universe don't care about now. You can ask them questions about this time or that time, but nowhere in the elegance of their mathematics is there any such thing as now. The idea of one specific moment, one universal now, racing along at 60 minutes an hour, slicing through the seconds, spitting the past out behind it, and throwing itself into the future. That's just an artifact of consciousness, something entirely of our own making, that the cosmos has no use for." We spoke like that. Nick, my mother had obviously reached a conclusion and required me to say yes before implementing the plan of action. "I agree with the doctor," I said. "Well then," Dr. Parsons reached for the phone beside his notepad. "I'll book you in for chemotherapy tomorrow. We've caught this early, and with swift treatment, the prognosis is..." He blanched somewhat beneath Mother's stare. Better. They call it chemotherapy. And sometimes the nurses would say things like, "Time to take your medicine, Nick." But nobody really thought of it as medicine. It's not. It's poison. They used to poison you if you got syphilis. Not so long before my blood turned sour, but a sufficient number of decades to take you back before World War II and the use of penicillin, the only effective treatment for syphilis was to dose the victim with arsenic. The logic being that although arsenic is a deadly poison, it is more deadly to the bacteria that cause the disease, and, with careful judgment, the doctor can kill one of you without killing the other. Chemotherapy is much the same. The chemicals used may not be such well-known favorites of celebrated poisoners, but the idea remained unchanged. The aim was to make my blood into a soup toxic enough to kill the cancer cells while allowing the rest of me to struggle on. Nobody on the ward wanted to talk much, except for a girl called Ava in the bed opposite. She wanted to talk too much. The rest of us seemed to want to pretend this wasn't happening, to read our books and our comics, eat our sweets if we still had appetites, listen to the hospital radio on headphones that looked like white plastic tongs. "They say some people don't vomit at all in the first week," Ava told me. I'd tried keeping my eyes glued to the pages of my book. I'd brought Bertrand Russell's Principia Mathematica because I wanted to see him build his marvelous mathematical house of cards. I needed to see the edifice raised in all its glory, fresh, entire, complete, like a perfect son sprung whole from his father's brow. Ava didn't care about any of that, any more than she cared about social signals like monosyllabic replies. Perhaps she had always been that way, or maybe she felt her diagnosis had given her license. "What are you reading? It looks dull. I don't like to read. I wish they had a television in here." Ava paused, for breath rather than for answers. She said she was 14, but I would have believed her if she told me 10 or 20. She was thin and bland, with lank brown hair and a blade of a nose. Ava had tumors in her liver, she said. She asked me what that meant, but didn't listen when I told her. I'm not sure she even knew where her liver was or what it did. "I bet I'm sick all night. This is my first night, you know. I'm going to be puking till we see yesterday's breakfast. Do you feel sick? I feel a little bit ill already. Do you taste lemons?" No. I wasn't sure what I felt like. Wound too tight? Ready to run? Hungry, sick, impatient, unable to stop the equations dancing and blurring on the page, a million things at once. But talking about it all wasn't one of those million things I felt like. Down the long green corridor that led to the outside world, I saw my mother. I expected her to be nearly halfway home by now, but there she was, facing a tall man in a dark coat. I couldn't tell much about him given the distance. But even so, there was something suddenly familiar there. Not in that everyday sense of recognition, but in the déjà vu way, certainty that I had seen this tableau before. The tall man in his dark coat, the fluorescent corridor lights gleaming on a perfectly bald head. The doors swung closed, sealing off the view. "I bet I'm sick all night. This is my first night, you know," Ava said, and above us the lights dimmed and then for a second shone brighter than they should.